Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It's another edition of the AfriCast. My name is Brendan Lutz, and joining me in studio today is Robin Chetty.
How's it going?
Good. And yourself? It's been a pretty busy couple of weeks, actually. Before we dive into the AfriCast, we just wanted to give you an update on a couple of stories going in order of freshest to least fresh. So we'll start off with the FPB amendment bill, which has been signed by President Cyril Ramaphosa into law. That news was dispensed by the presidency earlier today. What is unclear at the moment is whether it is being promulgated into law and whether it is being put into effect. We're not sure what the process is from here on out. The news literally dropped while we were en route to record this podcast, and we're now recording the podcast. Yeah. So forgive us if we're a little bit thin on details. This is a developing story. So we'll wait and see now what happens. We have spoken to the FPB before. We'll get in touch with them again now that it's been signed into law. One of the issues that the FPB highlighted when we spoke to them earlier this year is that they couldn't comment on the law until it was signed into law. So hopefully now we can get some clarity on some of the issues in that bill and some of the vagueness that is there. We also spoke to some lawyers. We'll link both of those stories down at the bottom so you can read them in tandem. But yeah, where we go to from here is unclear, but we are sure that there will be lots of comment from experts in the coming weeks.
And not experts as
well. And not experts, of course, yes. Everybody on the internet is a lawyer and an attorney and understands the law of South Africa. And Robin, you have an update regarding the Huawei Mate 30.
Yeah, the Mate 30 Pro. So it was unveiled a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, a couple of weeks ago. At the time, there was no information about local launch date, pricing, all those good things.
You weren't even allowed to touch it.
They had a demo area, and they had a bunch of handlers showing off the phone, but journos could not interact with the device, which was a bit odd and frustrating for me in particular.
Yeah.
But so now we have more information. Huawei's local executives have chatted to MyBroadband, and they have told him that the Mate 30 Pro is postponed in terms of its local launch. And that's really it. There's no information with regards to how long it's been postponed for, whether they will actually launch this year or not. And a lot of the issues center around the whole Google and specifically Android apps being available on the device. At this current stage, you won't have any access to Google Play services. There are workarounds. Whether those will void your warranty if you buy a Mate 30 Pro is unclear right now. So at the moment, again, there's still a lot more questions than there are answers for the Mate 30 Pro. All we do know is that its launch locally has been postponed. So, yeah.
And then just to wrap up the last bit of news that we have, the Samsung Galaxy Fold. So back in August, we attended the local launch of the Samsung Galaxy Note 10 series, because there's the 10, 10 Plus, 10E, whatever.
A bunch.
There's a whole bunch of them. And during that presentation, we asked Samsung Mobile South Africa's Chief Executive Officer Song Yun, whether the Galaxy Fold would be arriving in South Africa. And he said that it was. It was arriving in September. As you might be able to now know, it is October, and we don't have a Galaxy Fold in our review queue, so that means that it hasn't launched yet. Samsung has told us that the Galaxy Fold will launch here. They haven't given us a date or any sort of timeline for that matter. So if you were saving up for a Galaxy Fold, you're going to have to wait a little bit longer. We'll just have to wait and see when that device eventually gets released, although it has been marred by a lot of controversy since it was announced.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was sort of launched the week before where press got their hands on it. And then
A soft launch,
and it was a very soft launch because it didn't actually end up being launched. And Samsung pulled it, did some work on the phone, and yeah, they've now released it. It was released in South Korea in September, if I recall, midway through September around. Mm-hmm. So it is a real phone, but we haven't seen it yet, except for a pre-production model. So Yeah. So that's just a quick update on some of the news stories that we are following.
Not great news, really.
No, these are all very bad. I don't know why we decided to go this direction. This was a bad idea. But anyway, what are we talking about? Do you want to talk first?
Yeah, I'm happy to. Okay. My bathroom.
Okay, so what have you been doing this week, aside from writing bad news, Robin?
Yeah, so I've had a chance to play around with DJI's latest gimbal, the Osmo Mobile 3.
Sorry to interrupt you. Like, the Osmo Mobile gimbals have been, like, something that I have, desired for a very long time. Like, they're just such painfully useful little things. And especially if you, like, a content creator on the cheap. Like, I think it's really cool. But anyway, carry on. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I think that kind of perfectly leads into kind of what this whole device is around. So it's a gimbal essentially for your smartphone. And yeah, you mentioned content creators, and this is squarely who it's aimed at. I've been able to use it at a couple of local events, specifically Comic-Con Africa and this past weekend, Rage.
Mm.
And those kind of were great testing grounds for the actual usability of this device. I was able to pair it up with my Huawei Mate 20 Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's also quite important to preface that the performance of the actual device itself is also linked to the kind of phone you're using.
Oh,
if you're using a really great phone in terms of camera quality like the Mate 20 Pro is, you're going to get great content. So it's always a good idea to understand that if you're using, say, for example, entry-level mid-range phone with this kind of gimbal, you're not going to be, for example, getting the same experience from a flagship one. That said, what makes the Osmo Mobile 3 different this time around is that you can actually – it's collapsible.
Yeah, that's –
so you can fold it up and store it. It's to be fair, though, it's not necessarily – super compact.
Yeah, it's fits in my hand. It's like I have big hands though, so I mean it fits in the palm of my hand.
It's a humble brag there.
It's not something I'm proud of, but I mean I would say that it's compact even if you won't. I mean I'm pretty sure like you can slide that into your camera bag. And
yeah. So if you do, for example, purchase just the gimbal by itself, it comes with a little carry case, fits quite snugly inside there. I would say, though, if you, for example, are getting a whole bunch of accessories, you're probably going to want to opt for a different bag. We got, for example, the tripod grip that attaches to the bottom of the Osmo Mobile 3, and that, for example, struggles to fit inside. I'm hesitant to put it inside in case I crack this review model. So I think you'll probably want to opt for something different, a different kind of bag to hold everything. But back to the actual device itself. So it's foldable, relatively compact, and super easy to set up.
And super light as well. Yeah. Just want to mention that.
Yeah, it's quite light. I'm sorry, I'm unfolding it. and also, relatively stable. And you have a decent size or decent amount of real estate to actually grip and hold on to.
Yeah.
And the same goes for the grip, the tripod grip.
Mm.
When you don't have it, I guess, in tripod mode and you got folded up and holding it as well, it also feels quite strong and stable, which is pretty important considering you'll be walking around with what a phone on it that's what, 10 grand
plus? No, just 16 grand plus nowadays.
So in terms of, like, I guess, quality, it feels really good. Back, I guess, to the app, which also kind of empowers a lot of the functionality of the gimbal itself. It's the Mima app. It's available iOS, mm-hmm. Android, and the setup's pretty straightforward. You connect to your phone via Bluetooth. It picks up pretty quickly, and you're often ready to go. Some of the features on the app, one that I've been using quite nicely is the time-lapse feature.
Mm-hmm.
I've really enjoyed kind of using that. Shot a couple videos at Rage with it.
Oh, wow.
So you can kind of get your Casey Neistat-esque shots going.
I was about to say the Casey Neistat time-lapse intro.
You got
and
it.
I missed that.
You have to do it. so from I guess, that kind of content creation, it's really quite useful. I would say, though, specifically people that might be covering events like we often do, having your smartphone on the gimbal kind of limits you.
Yeah.
So you're probably going to be wanting to be dual wielding.
Oh, wow. Smartphones. Okay. So you were talking about like 32 grand here if you want to like well, be able to
well,
have
well maybe your second one is a bit dumber. It doesn't necessarily
fair enough.
But say for example you are checking emails and those kind of things, you don't want to be switching between the app and your phone. It can become a bit cumbersome, so from that aspect it might not necessarily be ideal.
Okay.
But if you are for example just shooting a video, walking through a crowd or checking out products and things like that, it's very useful.
Okay.
The tripod, as I mentioned, is fairly stable. I will note though that if you, for example, are putting it on a table and are trying to record time lapses and things like that, it is a little finicky in terms of
if
shaking.
You bump the table.
Yeah, it wants things to be as stable as possible when you're shooting with a tripod or time lapses.
Would that not be sort of mitigated by like your OIS inside your camera, like in your smartphone's camera?
That I'm not too sure. I would assume so. And I mean, on the Mate 20 Pro, the image stabilization is pretty solid.
Yeah.
So, it would be quite interesting to compare that to, say, a entry-level phone, kind of see what the differences are in quality. But I'm not too sure this is the kind of device that someone that is using entry-level phone will be using anyway. I mean, the Mobile 3 is going to cost you, I guess, for the gimbal itself, the wrist strap, storage pass, and some anti-slip pads is going to cost you around about 1,895 rand. So it's not cheap.
But, I mean, it's not cheap, but it's also not the, like, I remember these things used to retail for like 2.5-3 grand. I mean, that's a lot more affordable than they've been in recent years.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of actual functionality, it's offering you quite a bit. Anyone that knows about gimbals and has tried to get one for their camera knows just how expensive they can be.
Yeah.
And yeah, so from this perspective, I think it's relatively good value for money, especially if you're a content creator.
I think it's also just important to mention is that this is a consumer grade product. Like, this is not meant for like a professional filmmaker.
Yeah.
If you're a professional filmmaker, you're going to have your own like Ronin gimbal, like that's high end, very like purpose built for that. Like, I think this is like sort of, like you say, it's an entry level thing where somebody's like, oh, I want to start vlogging and make cool Casey Neistat time lapses. Like, this seems like it's for that type of person.
Yeah, well, I think it could also potentially be, I guess, the prosumer for, I don't like using that term, but
yeah.
I guess for lack of a better word, a prosumer, someone that knows what they're doing and just perhaps wants to be a bit more creative.
Okay.
I think it's also worth mentioning the fact that you probably are going to be buying more than one DJI Osmo product.
Absolutely.
Stuff like the Osmo Pocket, for example, which you are very keen to test out. How that will perhaps work as a vlogging option paired with the Mobile 3 for your time lapses, things like that, could be quite interesting.
Okay. I mean, then you also have your drones for your nice aerial shots.
So pretty much the whole Casey Neistat starter kit.
Damn, they should actually call it that. They should just offer like a drone, the Pocket, and the mobile and be like, become Casey Neistat.
Well, you mentioned that. I was actually chatting to DJI's, I guess, the regional manager for EMEA.
Yeah.
And she was mentioning that they are kind of looking into things like bundles of kits because South Africans love their bundles.
Yeah.
If you get more value for money, we love it.
Yeah.
So absolutely. Something like, I guess, a vlogging kit would make a lot of sense.
I mean, we've seen like somebody like Sony and Canon in the past have introduced these vlogging kits. I mean, like, props to them. They it's a really great offer, and often those bundles are really, really good value for money. But like, I think like DJI has that coolness factor, you know, with the drones and the Osmo mobile and then the Pocket and all these cool little gadgets. And I often forget that they're a Chinese company.
Yeah, look, I think at the moment it's not really...
Let's not talk about where they come
from.
Yeah. So you said the price was 1,000, how much?
1,895, and that's, I guess, just for the gimbal itself, a couple of pads and a pouch.
Okay.
If you're wanting to get the tripod grip, that's going to cost you... along with obviously the gimbal, blah, blah, blah. It's going to cost you around 2,255 rand. So it's... I would personally opt for that more expensive option purely because if you are going to want to be using the full kind of range of features, like specifically the time lapse, for example, you're going to want to have that.
And don't try and balance it without the tripod, or the tripod people.
Yeah, I think that's not advisable at all. I think the last thing I want to mention about this is the focus tracking. So, for example, when you're in the app, you can essentially pinch. Essentially pinch a specific area that you want to focus in on, whether that's a person or an object, and your camera will then focus around it. So if you're moving around an object, it will hold focus.
That's cool.
Yeah, so it is a really cool feature. Well, during the time I've used it so far, it hasn't been perfect yet.
Okay.
So if, for example, I focus in on a specific object that's not moving and I move around it, sometimes it takes a while to actually...
To catch up.
Yeah, and also I'm finding that the zoom... sometimes a bit skewed, so it will zoom in a bit too much than I'm ideally wanting.
Yeah. Okay.
So in terms of that, it still needs a bit of fine-tuning.
Is that a software issue, though, or do you think it's something to do with the hardware?
That, I'm assuming it would be a combination of both, because obviously the better the camera, the better it can actually detect and those kind of elements. So I think – but that's it. I mean, the Mate 20 Pro is – isn't exactly a terrible camera.
Yeah, it's not at all.
And if it is having a couple struggles here and there...
I do wonder about the lower-tier phones.
Yeah, I'm hoping that the software can assist in that regard.
So. Well, so this is the thing. So the reason I ask if it's a software issue is when DJI's drone started to feature the follow me feature, that the drone would basically act as like a third-person camera and follow you. There were a few issues with that service, and it's ultimately become better through various iterations. So that's why I ask if it's just a software thing, because it might get better over time through software.
I think that's so. I don't think it's not going to have anything to do with the mobile 3.
Yeah,
that's going to do with the Mimo app.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that if they refine it, perhaps patch, or get a few other iterations out, they can actually sort those kind of issues out.
Cool. So is this available in South Africa, and where can people get it?
It launched locally mid-September. We received it as well around that time, so our review will come out shortly. And you can pick it up pretty much anywhere that smartphone accessories are sold. Your best bet, especially for DJI stuff, is your iStore.
Mm.
I don't like heading to iStores, but that's probably one of your best bets. Places like Dion White as well, you'd probably be able to
take a lot. Like online, search DJI Mobile 3, go. Find online
places. Usual places you should be able to pick it up.
Awesome. Okay, so that's the DJI Mobile 3. I'm now going to talk a bit about a game, actually. And it's not Destiny. Even though Destiny Shadowkeep launched last night, there were some teething issues with launch. So we're not going to talk about that yet. What we're going to talk about is Breakpoint, Ghost Recon Breakpoint.
Tom Clancy's
Ghost Recon Breakpoint. I'm just going to call it Breakpoint. The game is not out yet, or not officially out. The official launch is the 4th of October. But if you are a Uplay Plus subscriber, or you pre-ordered the game, you have been able to play since Monday, which is really, really nice. I haven't put in too much time to it just yet, for reasons I will explain in just a little bit. Let's talk about the beta, and then we'll move into the final release. So 2 weeks ago, there was a private beta where if you were a Uplay, or right at the beginning of September rather, there was a private beta where if you subscribed to Uplay Plus or you had pre-ordered the game, you were able to take part in a private beta test. It was a bit janky, I will admit, and I think it's partly because Uplay Plus went live at the same time that the private beta went live, and Ubisoft servers just couldn't handle it, which is a bit...
But I mean, a beta is a beta for
reason. Exactly, right? So I didn't really kind of go, oh, this is the worst thing ever. I kind of wrote it off as, okay, this is just teething problems. And then there was, this past weekend, there was an open beta where anybody could just sign up and you could play the game. And that was a lot better. There were the connectivity issues I experienced in the first beta were no longer there. Some of the UI elements had been updated, and it was really fun. I ran around with a couple of mates, explored the locations, and it was decent. And then on Monday, I jumped back into the game after downloading it again for the third time, because I don't keep games on my computer. Why must I do that? Basically, the open beta had brought you through the first bit of the game. So the first mission you did over and over, you did about three times if you've now bought the game. And you are a ghost, a highly trained American soldier known as a ghost, who has been sent to investigate a ship that crashed near an island called Aroa. And Aroa is a what's the best word here? A futuristic utopia where Skull Tech, who is the equivalent of like Google, makes robotics that better humanity.
Ooh, two things up your script.
Dude, I don't know. Anyway, so this Jason Skell owns this island, and you watch a little intro video about how they're bettering humanity and all that stuff, and then obviously that's not what's really happening on that island. There's more sinister stuff going on, and you as a ghost are sent to investigate. En route to where you are supposed to be investigating, your helicopter fleet, I would say, gets attacked by something. We don't know what. It's millions of tiny drones. Okay, like that's basically what it is. So I can see it. I don't know how these trained soldiers can't see it, but anyway, and your ship goes down, and you are then introduced to the island of Aroa, the Sentinels, who are the people that basically patrol there. You meet the wolves, and then you also meet John Bernthal's character, who plays Cole D. Walker. I don't want to go too much into who he is, what his role is in this game, because that would be spoilers. But John Bernthal's acting performance here is really, really good. And that's a problem, because nobody else's is. The voice acting for your main character, who is just called Nomad, is laughable at times. Oh, like, okay. there's one scene, right, where you are talking to somebody in your squad who looks like he is pretty much dead. And the voice acting is just like, you'll get through it. Don't worry about it. We'll handle this.
Walk it off. It's good.
We'll handle this. Don't worry about it. It's just bad. And then you've got like John Bernthal, and it's like, oh, wow. This is actually really good. So you live for those moments where he's in it. Anyway, so you arrive on this island, you kill some enemies, and then you discover this area called Erewhon, which backwards seems to spell nowhere, funnily enough. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Erewhon is like your central base of operations, and that's where I start to have a bit of a problem with the game. In Ghost Recon Wildlands, now this is not a sequel to Wildlands, I must state this. This is just another addition in the Ghost Recon franchise.
The hundreds.
Whatever it is. But Wildlands was really, really good. And for what made Wildlands really good for me was that it was, even though I could play with my mates, it was a purely single player title. And it made sense in the context of the game. You are an elite soldier that needs to get into quote unquote Bolivia, because Ubisoft got into trouble for that. So we just need to say that it's Bolivia in quotation marks. And the idea was that because you were a ghost, you needed to be stealthy, you needed to remain hidden, you couldn't interact with the local people. You basically needed to get in, kill the main dude, get out. And it worked really well. I really loved that premise. It gave, every time you encountered an enemy, they would immediately go for you, which made sense. Aroa is very different. Breakpoint is very different in that regard. Number one, you are in a very social space where you see thousands of other people. So the illusion that you are an elite ghost that is here on this island alone and needs to off one or two bad guys just disappears immediately the moment you load into Erewhon. And then that kind of sets the tone for the rest of the game. I have been asked multiple times to join the PvP ghost war thing while I'm playing the game. I don't want to. I don't. Like, what I liked about Wildlands is that when you wanted to play PvP or multiplayer, you had to specifically load into it from the main menu. Here, it's like, oh, well, you can just go and load into a game and do PvP, which is kind of like, okay.
So they're really pushing a multiplayer.
They really are pushing the multiplayer thing. And that is kind of evident in the in that being so easily accessible and the social hub. And it just, building off of what Wildlands did and having played Wildlands recently, it's just such a jarring difference between the two games. Where Wildlands was very much focused on let's try and be realistic as possible, obviously with some caveats. And then you get this, which feels super arcadey. Like just something off the top of my head. In Wildlands, if you got into a firefight and ran out of ammo, you would have to go and look for an ammo cache. In this game, and ammo caches just weren't, they were like in the middle of hardcore guarded territories guarded by enemies. or you could happen upon them in the wild, but you wouldn't just ever find bullets just lying in the middle of nowhere. In Breakpoint, you can. You can just find bullets lying in there. And I get it from a standpoint of like, okay, this is a quality of life improvement. You don't want people running around like, oh, I don't have any ammo. So it's a quality of life improvement. But it does kind of break away from this immersion that they want you to have. And that's kind of the thing, right? Is that there's this whole push for immersion, but it's just not there. You get pulled out of it so often. The gameplay is all right. There are still one-shot headshot kills, one bullet, one kill for headshots. Enemies aren't bullet sponges, which is nice. Like, you can pepper them with one or two bullets and they're down. But now there's also a couple of things that you have to be aware of. So there are drones everywhere, and periodically these drones will fly over you. If a drone spots you, and they will spot you if you are standing up or moving or shooting someone, a drone will spot you. Your minimap immediately goes static, and drones, high-level drones and high-level enemies descend upon you out of nowhere. Like, you can be in the middle of, like, a river doing nothing, and a drone flies over and you get spotted, and all of a sudden you're dead because you can't run. Or you can't run from these guys because they are, like, they've got drones. So what are you going to do? You're going to run from a drone, mates. It's not going to work. So to kind of counteract this constant... constantly being chased by drones, there's an option now when you have gone prone in the game to camouflage yourself. And that's a really cool feature, because what's nice about that is that if you're being hunted by enemies, you can kind of go prone and camo, and then enemies can literally stand on top of you and they won't even know you're there.
Is this feature limited in any way, restricted?
So, yeah. So if you're in, if you're on like a concrete... like concrete slab, you won't be able to use the camo.
No, I mean, in terms of like, is there a time limit?
Oh no, you can lay there forever if you fantastic. Want. Like, so what my favorite thing to do is to go prone, camo, and then shoot my drone up to scout the area, because that was one of the things in Wildlands that really like got to be so many times, was you would throw your drone up, start scouting, and then an enemy would just walk upon you and be like, oh, I'm gonna alert the entire country. So there are a number of quality of life improvements. Like things like upgrading weapons is really simple now. And once you upgrade one type of weapon, that upgrade carries through to other weapons that you pick up. There's some really cool stuff with the leveling. Like, the leveling I find is a lot better than it was in Wildlands. There's a clear path to where you can go, and then you can kind of break free and play the way that you want to play, which is really, really nice. The map is really big. The location is very beautiful. Like, a desolate island is such a really great place for a game. It just works really well. I do want to bring up the microtransactions, because it is something that a lot of people are talking about. There are a lot of microtransactions. You can buy anything in this game. You can buy weapon packs, you can buy XP packs, you can flat out buy levels. You don't even need to buy XP boosters. You can buy levels straight from the store. Do I hate this? A little bit. But the thing with this is that I'm never going to use those features because I want to play the game. My question, however, is how much... or whether, if at all, Ubisoft has kneecapped things like XP gain, finding weapons, and currency within the game that you can earn. It doesn't seem like they have. Just basing this off of my brief experiences with the open beta and now the final release, like, the amount of credits that I'm getting is equal to what I was getting in the open beta, and that's fine. Like, I never felt like I was running out of money. And if I did, then I would just have to go and farm for it, you know, do a bit of grinding. So I don't think it's egregious. And the thing is that you don't have to buy those things. They're also not
advertising. So can you actually get by without having to
buy anything? Well, absolutely. I mean, you the stuff that you buy... So, okay, so how the game works is that there's a main shop. And then you can go to that shop and you can buy blueprints. And then you complete certain tasks. So, for instance, you get 15 headshots. You need to get 15 headshots for this weapon, and then you'll have the blueprint, and then you can craft it. You can fast-track that by buying the blueprint outright using skull credits, which is the game's currency in-game that you can earn just by doing stuff. And then there are ghost coins that you buy with real-world money. And that's for, like, cosmetic items and other stuff, right? Like, stuff that doesn't affect the game. You can buy skull credits with ghost coins, so technically you can buy an advantage. But you can buy an advantage if you grind through the game and you earn coins or you earn currency. So you can fast track it even through normal playthrough, even by not like you. Every so often when you go to the shop, there'll be what are they called? I'm going to call them express weapons because I can't remember the term right now. But essentially what you can do is you can bypass having to do the shooting, the mission for that weapon, and just have it immediately ready to go for you when you go. So, you can buy these things if you want to, but like why? Why did you buy the game if you're not going to play it?
Well, I think it brings up the whole issue of kind of ethics. So someone like you, who knows better, is not going to go and waste money on buying stuff that you can actually essentially work to earn anyway. A younger, more naive gamer with access to money, probably his parents' money, is going to go and...
Fair enough. I mean, it is kind of exploitative. And you can... The one thing I will say with Ubisoft is that unlike in Assassin's Creed... Oh, actually, let me not say that because I haven't explored the menus fully yet. So let me not just say that. I do know in Assassin's Creed Odyssey, there were microtransactions in the menu from the game. So when you pause the game, you could go to the store and buy stuff right from the pause menu. We're seeing a lot of companies do this nowadays. I think the issue is that, or what people are angry about, is that, like you say, is that somebody who doesn't know better goes and buys these things and then ruins it for everybody or racks up thousands in debt for their parents. Personally, I'm of the view that if you're going to buy those things, you're doing yourself a disservice. Sure, there are XP boosters and stuff that you can do. And who knows, maybe towards the later end, as you get closer to the end levels, it takes longer to level up. Maybe you're tempted to buy that XP booster. That's your prerogative, though. And I will say that the one thing that I'm glad about is that there aren't any loot boxes in this game. So every purchase you make, you know what you are buying. Mm-hmm. You know exactly what you're spending your money on. It's not a chance of, oh, yeah, I got the sniper rifle that I was looking for. No, if you want that sniper rifle, buy it or go find it out in the open world. So, I mean, there's a lot of microtransactions. There really is. Like everything, like you can buy anything in that game with real world money. And I don't know. I don't think it's that egregious. I think I need a bit more time with the game. Our review will come through next week, just for anybody that is waiting. Also, I mean, here's the other point that I want to bring up about this, is that everything I say about this, if you have Uplay Plus, everything I just said doesn't matter to you because you don't need to buy the game. You can literally open Uplay Plus and play it.
Yeah, that's one of my questions. It wasn't, I guess, Breakpoint related, but how is Uplay Plus at the moment?
So I have quite enjoyed it so far. So there was the free month now in September that just finished, and I have renewed my service because it's good, right? It's nice to be able to... I love Ubisoft games, first and foremost. So I love The Division. I love Assassin's Creed. I loved Watch Dogs. I loved Wildlands. So for me, having Uplay Plus is having access to all those games that I want to play when I want to play them. As I mentioned right at the top of this, is that there was a bit of server issues when the service first went live. That seems to have been cleared up a lot now, though. I think that the price is decent. I think it's €15 per month, which is not bad for the entire catalog of Ubisoft services, or Ubisoft games, rather. Yeah, I find it hard to find complaint with this. I think it's better than Xbox Game Pass for PC, mainly because there's just more titles on there. Though Xbox Game Pass for PC is pretty good. The thing I want to say with this is that what I like about Uplay Plus is the fact that I don't have to go and buy Ghost Recon Breakpoint. I could sign up at the beginning of the month, pay my subscription for the month, play Breakpoint until I've finished it in a month, which I'm sure you could do, and then not have to renew my service. So, I mean, it works out to be cheaper than if you were to buy the game, and you could just do that when you want to buy the game. Of course, if you want to just keep it going forever, you will need to keep your subscription going forever. I think it's a good idea. I do wonder, though, whether Ubisoft can keep up the pace with regards to game releases. The other thing that I am concerned about as well is that Ubisoft bundles the the best edition of their games
to Uplay Plus.
Into Uplay Plus. Mm-hmm. So what happened with Wildlands, for instance, is Wildlands, I had just the base game. When I logged into it after I activated Uplay Plus, I had everything. And I was like, cool. This is great. The only thing I didn't get was stuff that you can buy through microtransactions. But I mean, like, it did worry me, and I did wonder, like, how much money are they losing? Because people aren't going to buy these collector's editions anymore. But maybe they will, because maybe there will be specific things specific to those. Who knows? So far, so good. Yeah, I just do wonder whether Ubisoft will have the pace to be able to keep up with the demands that people have for games, you know, and see whether they manage to keep up with the pace that people want games at. Because if I'm paying $200-something a month, like, or whatever, 200-something rand per month, I want to get the best value for money. And if you're not giving that to me, I'm going to take my money elsewhere. And on PC, there are lots of services where you can do that. Humble Bundle, there's now Windows, there's Origin Access, all these ones. So, yeah, I do also, sorry, this will be my last point on this, is how much people are going to end up spending on game subscription services month versus how much they spend on games per month. Because, and it's already happened, two of my mates forgot to cancel their Uplay Plus subscription and would charge the full amount now in October because they forgot to cancel their subscriptions. So they've now canceled, but in a couple of months when a new game comes out, when, let's say, Beyond Good and Evil comes out, if they want to sign up for that and play the game and they forget to cancel, what happens then? So it will be interesting to see how this whole situation plays out. I think the best thing to do at the moment is sign up for the month that you want to play a game in, sign up on there, and then cancel it at the end of the month. But yeah, Ghost Recon Breakpoint, so far, it's a decent entry. I don't want to say it's as good as Wildlands. I don't want to say it's as good as Division. It's somewhere in between at the moment. And yeah, next week I'll have a full review for you.
So, sorry, just one last thing. It's officially launching on the 4th.
Yes.
In terms of what you've experienced so far, it's everything. You have full access to everything.
Full access. Right. So the only thing I don't have access to, of course, is the raid, which is coming later, which is a four-person activity on a separate island. But that's fine. They've already started to build up to that. But yeah, from the 30th of September, basically, I've had full access to the game. So, I mean, and the launch has gone pretty well. Well, the pre-launch has gone pretty well so far. I haven't seen any connectivity issues, no server issues. Yeah, it's been good. But Ubisoft has kind of gotten used to handling hectic launches all at once. So, yeah, let's wait and see. My review will be, as I mentioned, my review will be out next week. And, yeah, can take it from there, hopefully.
Cool.
Yeah, that's it then. That's it for us, because Clinton's not here. Clinton is actually, is he studying or writing exams?
I want to say studying.
I think he's studying, but if he's writing, good luck.
Yeah, best of luck.
Best of luck for the studying as well, because that's a pain in the behind. But that's going to be it from me, Brendan Lotz, and from Robin Chetty.
Yep, cheers.
We'll see you next week. Cheerio.
Bye-bye.